And it's time for our first reading this morning, which is, I'll be reading from the Common English Bible, the first six verses of 2 Corinthians chapter 4. This is why we don't get discouraged, given that we received this ministry in the same way that we received God's mercy. Instead, we reject secrecy and shameful actions. We don't use deception, and we don't tamper with God's word. Instead, we commend ourselves to everyone's conscience in the sight of God by the public announcement of the truth. And even if our gospel is veiled, it is veiled to those who are on the road to destruction. The God of this age has blinded the minds of those who don't have faith, so they couldn't see the light of the gospel that reveals Christ's glory. Christ is the image of God. We don't preach about ourselves. Instead, we preach about Jesus Christ as Lord, and we describe ourselves as your slaves for Jesus' sake. God said that light should shine out of the darkness. He is the same one who shone in our hearts to give us the light of the knowledge of God's glory in the face of Jesus Christ. May God bless us as we hear the reading of his living word.
Our second reading is from the Good News of Mark, chapter 9, verses 2 through 9. 6 days later, Jesus took Peter, James, and John and brought them to the top of a very high mountain where they were alone. He was transformed in front of them, and his clothes were amazingly bright, brighter than if they had been bleached white. Elijah and Moses appeared and were talking with Jesus. Peter reacted to all of this by saying to Jesus, "Rabbi, it's good that we are here. Let's make three shrines, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He said this because he didn't know how to respond, for the three of them were terrified. Then a cloud overshadowed them, and a voice spoke from the cloud. "This is my son, whom I dearly love. Listen to him." Suddenly, looking around, they no longer saw anyone with them except Jesus. As they were coming down the mountain, he ordered them not to tell anyone what they had seen until after the human one had risen from the dead. The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. If you were listening when Aaron was reading the epistle letter from Paul, you might have noticed that it was Paul being Paul at his most cheerleading form. Paul was cheerleading and encouraging the Corinthians to keep doing what they had done, to keep passing on to others that which they had received in Jesus Christ. He said, "Don't be discouraged. This ministry that has been given to us will be passed on. Don't be discouraged." It must have been that Corinth was a bit like things are today. People were excited about their encounters with Jesus Christ in their lives. They wanted to tell the story, but when they told the story, their friends didn't want to hear it. Their family ignored them. Some people even listened and then fell away. And they couldn't understand why others weren't getting what they got, and they wondered if it was even worth going on, if they would have the perseverance to continue in the face of a world that didn't want to hear their message, a world that was distracted and busy, a world blinded by the gods of this world. Now, some of us may have spent some of the days this week paying attention to at least one of the gods of this world. In this day, some of us have put our faith and our belief and our trust in the stock market We are expecting to have an awesome retirement, not to mention anybody here. And so we may have spent a little bit of time worrying, a little bit of time wondering what the future would hold, because we were depending on the stock market. Some of us have depended on family that has let us down. Some of us have depended on our own strength and our health. Some of us depend to get our energy and our happiness from video games. There are all sorts of distractions in the world, all sorts of places that we put our trust. Paul calls these the gods of the world. In his day, it would have been idols, it would have been temples. They had great parties at these sorts of worship, and people were tempted to join in. But he said, we have something better, something greater, something that overcomes the gods of this world. Now, it's not like the world is all bad. There are things that are even good that can be a distraction. One of my favorite distractions is the Olympics. There's nothing wrong with watching the Olympics. They can encourage us. They can give us a good message. They're wonderful and exciting, but they can become an addiction. They can take the place of everything else in our lives. These two, even good things, can become our idols and can distract us from worship, the heart of worship that Erin was singing about today and that we joined her in. So, we can take some of these things, however, and use them in a way that they're not quite intended. I was reading this week about an Olympian who's actually from West Jordan. Her name is Jerrica Tandeman. And she got excited about the Olympics right after the 2002 Olympics were here. She had watched the speed skating at the Kearns Oval, and she had encouraged her parents to let her take some skating lessons, and I think they had this image in their mind that she would become one of the skaters like we've been seeing in the couple of nights, the last nights, the figure skaters, a pair dancer, but she wanted to be a speed skater. She really loved the speed, she loved the racing, and so she has continued, and she actually is going to the Olympics, and she will compete this next week. But it says that she spends about 6 hours a day training on land and ice, rotating between racing, cardio, and weight training, along with prep on equipment. And she also has other family chores. She has school. She has very little time for herself, but she's very focused on her sport. If we took this to heart and realized how much it takes to become the best you can be in a sport, we might transfer that to what it takes in our spiritual life. I can't quite imagine standing here and asking you to practice your faith for 6 hours a day, every day. It's hard enough to get everybody to show up 1 hour on Sunday. But the thing that happens is that when you show up, you encourage each other to at least be here for that 1 hour. When you see your friends, when you see others that you have been missing, it encourages us to be here. And you know this. If you were, well, not many of you were, if you were here last week, you know it was depressing at both services because most of the chairs were empty. We weren't here to encourage each other. We were getting ready for the Super Bowl. We had houses to clean and parties to get ready for. And, of course, some people were ill as well. There were all kinds of good reasons that people couldn't be here and people were worshiping other places. But you know that when there is a good crowd, you can feel the energy. The room feels different. It is encouraging you, like Paul, become a cheerleader for others, so that even if this isn't the worship service that is the best one you've ever been to, it becomes precious because of the others that are there beside you. There is an energy that happens when the room is full. So why worship? Why do I worship? I worship because I remember. I remember my aunt, who every day went to Mass. She was a good Catholic Christian. She would go to Mass at 6 in the morning. She might be the only one there often, she and the priest. And then she would be at work at 7 o'clock at Mobil Oil down in downtown Detroit. And I remember my aunt and how she treasured worship. And more than that, I remember how my aunt treasured me. And I wanted to be like her. My aunt is always in my mind whenever I walk in to worship. And I also remember my father, my aunt's brother, who every Sunday got us to church about 1/4 after the hour that we were supposed to be there, just in time to be there for the important parts, and had us leave before the end. My father, I remember, both for his faithfulness and for the fact that he was going to make it just as short as he could. His faith was based on the law that he needed to be there, but he was there, and I remember, and when I worship, I bring that memory with me. But more than this, I remember being a young married woman, moving from my home to Wyoming, arriving at First Methodist Church in Casper, walking into worship. I had been raised Catholic. I had not been to a Methodist service before. I was full of trepidation. I sat with my husband in the back row. And the pastor preached a message on love and grace. What the world needs now, he said, is love, sweet love. And there was a song, and he had on his, probably it was an 8-track at that time, he played the song in church. I couldn't believe that music from my world had showed up in church, that these people connected worship with life. That service touched me. And I wouldn't be here now if I hadn't been there. I've also figured out since then that that service that touched me and initiated me into United Methodist worship, that service probably sent a couple of the longtime members away. I think some of them never returned. They could not believe that that secular music had become a part of their worship service. And so when I remember that, I remember that not every worship service is for me. I don't know who gets touched each week. I just trust that someone has been touched. And that person too will remember that day, will carry that day with them, will be encouraged to worship because There was a time, there was a day, there was an hour when God spoke to them in the worship service. I worship because I remember. And worship itself is all about remembering. It's about remembering those times when God has touched us. It's about remembering to look at our neighbors and see where God is touching them. To be generous in allowing people to experience all sorts of worship. Even as Jesus came to his last days, he gathered his disciples around him and he told them to remember. That's why we bring our children, so that we build memories, they build a community, so that when life is difficult, they will remember a place where there's support. They will remember a place where others have known their name. They will remember a place where they can return to God. And they will know the language. It won't feel strange. It will feel like coming home. This is why I worship. Jesus also worshiped, and he took his friends with him. He took them up the mountain, and on that mountain they had an experience. Jesus' clothes glowed, and his face shone, just as Moses had had this experience on the mountaintop when he received the commandments. Now Jesus was having that experience as well. And the disciples saw not just Jesus, but they saw Moses and Elijah, their great prophets. And they wanted to worship. And the funny thing is that Jesus said, well, we can worship, but we can't stay here. We have to go off the mountain, come down the mountain, and don't tell. In Mark, the disciples were never supposed to tell. They were always supposed to keep quiet until later. But of course, eventually they told, because we have the story, we know the story, that they went up the mountain and they saw who Jesus was. Worship for the disciples was a place of revelation. Worship for us should be a place also of revelation, where what was confusing, what was disturbing, becomes clear. And we should leave this place glowing a little bit, on fire a little bit, touched, so that we can touch others. So when they see us, they want to be where we are. They want to have what we have. They want to have that message. And it may not be received quickly. Even in Corinth, even with Paul, the people didn't receive the message right away. But over the years and over time, this became a center of faith. And over the years and over time, this place can be a center of faith. Our families can be centers of faith. Our lives can be centers of faith. But we have to worship. We have to center our lives. We have to practice our faith in order to be ready for the trials and the competitions and the challenges of life. This is your training ground. This is the place you are equipped to encounter the life that is in front of you. And not just this life, but even death. Why do I worship? Why do you worship? Remember. Remember those who have led you here. Remember the one you have encountered here. Remember to take with you the glow of the experience of God's presence in your lives and through you in the world. May it be so, and may it be so.